Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Life and tune.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do. Your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it?
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know the slogan for this show: if there's power in numbers, then the positive change purchase and cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as an economic blueprint for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar design, EV charge, EV manufacturing, installation, workforce development, and other African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of higher energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. Please go over to our GoFundMe link, and you'll see the BSLF HBCU Solar Talk Show Radio Show Initiative. And this show is also brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar. And you can get more information on that organization by logging on to the website at blacksinsolar.org. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a scheduled guest for the day show, but we do have a very, very exciting, some very exciting information that we're going to be bringing to our listening audience as it relates to the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. Now, the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, under the Inflation Reduction Act, amended the Clean Air Act to create a new program. The Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund is the first of its kind programs to provide competitive grants to mobilize financing and leveraging private capital for clean energy and climate projects that reduces green gas emissions, with an emphasis on projects that benefit low and disadvantaged communities. And to further the Biden-Harris administration commitment to the environment, the question becomes, if you're interested in providing comments on this, the feedback for the Green Reduction Fund should be submitted in writing to Docket PA dash Docket Town EPA dash HQ dash OA dash 22-0859 at regulations.gov. There is a blue link there that will take you directly to that. The Greenhouse Reduction Fund is an unprecedented opportunity to accelerate the adoption of greenhouse gas reduction technologies and to position the United States to compete in the 21st century economy. The Greenhouse Reduction Act funds provides $27 billion. Yes, I did say, ladies and gentlemen, with a B, $27 billion to the EPA for expenditures until September the 30th of 2024, which includes $7 billion for competitive grants to enable low-income and disadvantaged communities to employ or benefit for zero emissions technologies, includes technology for residential rooftops. Nearly $12 billion for competitive grants for eligible entities to provide financial and technical assistance to provide projects to reduce or avoid greenhouse gas emissions, and $8 billion for competitive grants for eligible entities to provide financial and technical assistance to projects that reduce and avoid greenhouse emissions in low-income and disadvantaged communities. EPA is launching a coordinated stakeholders engagement strategy to help shape the implementation of the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, ensure the full economic environment benefits of this historic investment are realized by all Americans. EPA is commencing a series of listening sessions to allow members of the public and key stakeholders groups to provide insights to EPA on the implementation of the Greenhouse Gas Emission Fund. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I am privileged to let you know that I listened to the session on last night, but you're going to be listening, which was session one, you're going to be listening to section one. And without further ado, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. The EPA, Environmental Protection Agency's Greenhouse Reduction Fund listening session.
For the folks that are just now joining us, I'm Taylor Gillespie from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. As many of you know, the Historic Inflation Reduction Act has created a new opportunity to drive greenhouse gas emissions down. Our goal tonight is to hear insights from you on how EPA staff can carry out a quick round of introductions from the White House and state leadership, and then we're going to spend the remainder of our time together tonight hearing from you. Just a reminder, we do have live travel statement interpretation in advance. So if you want to access that service, please click the interpretation button and move into Spanish Town. If you're having any technical difficulties, please reach out to the community. We're recording tonight's listening session, so we'll make it available online in the coming days. With that, I'm going to turn it over to EPA staff and you, Jeff. Dan?
Okay, thanks a lot, Taylor, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the first EPA 12 listening session on Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. It's fantastic to have so many people here with us tonight taking interest in this new program. As Taylor mentioned, the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund was established by the Inflation Reduction Act that President Biden signed into law in August of this year. That act overall is historic climate law that's projected to reduce U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by 40% by 2030. And this Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund program will play a critical role in driving that decarbonization by catalyzing investments all across the country with a particular focus on low-income and disadvantaged. So that fund, which is what we're going to talk about tonight, the largest program that EPA has mentioned that came out of inflation reduction. It's not the only one. So I want to briefly mention a couple of other programs that EPA came out of inflation reduction. First, there's more than $11 billion in new funding that will be administered by our Office of Air and Regulation, and that will target emission reductions from ports, heavy-duty vehicles, implement a new waste fee on methane for the gas sector, fund methane reduction projects, and provide local and state partners with funding to plan and implement emission reduction strategies. The IRA also includes $3 billion for environmental and climate justice bond grants to fund community-based nonprofit organizations serving disadvantaged communities, and also includes $350 million to support expanding and standardizing environmental product declarations to reduce embodied carbon construction materials. So those are some of the highlights. There's more, and we're going to have other opportunities to discuss those programs. But here tonight, we're going to focus on the greenhouse gas reduction fund. Now, the text, the legislative text that creates this new fund is fairly brief, just a couple pages of text. For the $27 billion that Congress appropriated for this fund. So we've got a bunch of questions that we want to work through to determine how to best use this unprecedented level of resources and new opportunities to reduce pollution and to invest in low income expansion. And that's why we're here tonight with all of you, and that's why you're so important. So I'm just going to do a couple quick overview of the what's in the law. As we say on the slide, there's three funding streams. The first is $7 billion for states, municipalities, tribal governments, and that's for the purpose of providing grants, loans, other types of financial assistance, and technical assistance to make low-income and disadvantaged employed or benefit from zero-emission technology. And the law specifically named distributed technology on residential rooftops as one of the technologies targeted by that $7 billion part of the fund. The key difference between this part of the fund and the rest of it, I'll talk about in a second, is that states, municipalities, and tribal governments are eligible to receive funding. And this entire $7 billion stream is entirely dedicated to low-income. The other funding streams are available to grantees that meet statutory criteria and definition provided eligible recipients. And those criteria are listed on this slide. These are nonprofit entities that do not take deposits, that are funded by public or charitable contributions, that invest or finance investment projects alone or with other investors. And of course, the purpose of the projects is those eligible entities are ones that reduce the gas emissions. So organizations that meet that criteria will be able to identify eligible to apply for these two streams, $12 billion to build projects to reduce or avoid greenhouse gases, and there's another $8 billion for such projects, specifically in low-income and disadvantaged. And these entities will be able to make direct investments in projects or to fund other public, quasi-public, or nonprofit entities to provide pensions. So you add it all up, and that's nearly $27 billion like capital and technical for projects, for technologies that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and other pollution all around the country, and particularly in low income. So it's an amazing opportunity to pass ahead of Jerry today by a program for competitive grants to enable the applicants who meet those criteria to apply for funds. We are working hard to meet what Congress set as a very ambitious legislative timeline, and of course we want to do that not just in the statute, but in dollars out and working across the country as soon as possible. Of course, alongside that, we're going to be working to design a program that's both effective and also has appropriate guardrails and quality control measures. So you take that responsibility of overseeing these resources. So we are really here before we turn it back to Taylor. I want to recognize and turn it to Jackie Wise, who is Special Assistant President Policy Office. John, over to you.
Thanks, Dan, and good evening, everyone. It is fantastic to be here with all of you in this really incredible moment. I bring greetings from the National Climate Advisor, Ali Zaidi, who couldn't be here this evening, but was also very incredibly excited to hear about the attendance of this for this event. Look, since the campaign, the president has been committed to delivering an innovative financing mechanism that could leverage private investment into what we know are the hundreds of millions and billions of dollars of clean energy, climate, greenhouse gas reduction, and air pollution reduction projects that exist in our communities and go unfunded every year. The Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund is the realization of that vision. I want to underscore that, and all the folks on this call who've worked so hard to make that vision possible, I just want to take a second to thank you for that hard work to get us to this moment, and it's an exciting moment. But now we get to work. We actually get to implement this vision. We're really excited to hear your thoughts on how we shape this unprecedented investment in such a way that it actually delivers on that vision, and that we see institutions, community financing institutions, green banks, credit unions come up who now invest in climate and energy projects, and that we see greenhouse gas emission reduction and air pollution emission reduction that stops poisoning our communities, and that we see wealth creation and economic development communities that have too long been left behind. I won't say much more. I'm just really excited to hear from all of you. My last thing I'll just ask is that everyone stay engaged. As Dan said, this is a historic opportunity for this entire administration, but it will require all of us pulling together to get to the right results. So we really look forward to your comments tonight, your comments on the request for information, and your continued thoughts and ideas as we try to live on this vision. Thank you all.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Scotty. Thanks, Dan. I've got just a couple of quick remarks on how to go. It's really our great takeover. So for those that are just not joining us or maybe joining, and I'm going to be the moderator for tonight's call, I want to share a couple things about myself, which I think are going to tell you a little bit more about how I'm going to moderate this discussion than if I were to just tell you my job title here at EPA. The first is that I grew up in a really the parents who were involved in trying to solve family issues, facing our town and facing our country. And I watched them engage local leadership and other officials to bring change and solutions to create a better system. So really understand how important it is that you all are able to have your voices heard tonight and make sure that you understand that you really can have an impact on this new program. The second is that I'm an Army veteran, and I want to use those skills from my experience, my background, to show you the respect, but also I want to keep us on target. I want to keep the session moving. We have hundreds of people on the call, with many folks who have registered to give comments on this new EPA grant opportunity. So we are limiting remarks to 15 minutes. We're going to have a clock on the screen that you're going to be able to see that time stripped down for you. But I also want to note that this is a drone opportunity to make comments. So after that 3 minutes, shows up on the clock, I'm going to come on screen. I'm going to really try to allow you to wrap up your thoughts. But if you're still, have more to say, I'm going to ask you to please submit those additional comments on the public document. And we're going to share that link in the chat later on. As with all virtual meetings, we have to be special at this time. Hopefully folks have found that Spanish interpretation channel already. But just a reminder, if you have joined in the last couple of minutes or so, we have live interpretation in Spanish tonight. But quality and meaningful interpretation requires that we speak a little bit slower. And I'm probably not even being the best example of that right now. But all of that to say that really, if I come on and I ask you to slow down, please know that it's because we want our interpreters to be able to provide quality and meaningful interpretation. There's also closed captioning and American Sign Language interpreters tonight. And the session is being recorded, and it's going to be available in the coming days. I want to remind folks that this is not the only opportunity to comment on this support program. We may not make it to everyone who has their hand raised. And if that is the case, November 9th, it's going to be at the same time from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. all that in mind, it is time for you to raise your hand if you would like to offer comments tonight. If you join through Zoom, please raise your hand if you would like to make a comment. You can do that by clicking the reaction button and selecting raise hand. Please leave your hand up until the call ends. Please keep it up the whole time. If you're joining through a phone number right now that's associated with the meeting, you're going to want to hit *9 in order to raise hand. While leadership from EPA and the White House are here tonight, as you heard from Dan and Jackie, we are going to move from one person to the next to hear from as possible. So if you have questions, we will keep those in mind as we further develop the program, but we are not going to be responding to questions directly this evening. So with that, I'm going to give folks just a minute to go ahead and get their hands raised, whether that's hitting *9 or using that reaction button. And then we're going to call on a couple of folks. As soon as I see, I can raise you. Okay, great. First, I'm going to call on Kathy Capone, and I just want to apologize in advance if I am butchering the pronunciation of any of the names. But Kathy, I'm going to turn to you.
Thank you, Taylor. No worries. Good evening. My name is Kathy Mann, and I am the President and CEO of Inclusive. Thank you for the opportunity to provide feedback on the implementation of the Green Gas Reduction Fund. Inclusive is a nonprofit CDFI intermediary and a national network of 490 community development credit unions serving more than 15 million Americans. Community development credit unions are financial cooperatives formed by low and moderate people, predominantly in communities of color, to meet the financial needs of their members and communities. As such, they have deep ties to their local economy, extensive experience developing financial products to people who have been excluded from the financial industry. That strong record, track record. Just real quickly, in the past 12 months, just 96 of the community-based lenders that we've trained have invested more than $2.24 billion in green loans at lower green taxation. With this in mind, we have the following recommendation. We urge the EPA to prioritize resources towards the high-impact green lending, low-income, and historically redlined. This approach will not only address resource inequities and environmental impact in these communities, it will also drive significant reduction. For example, research shows that people of color face longer commute times by car, but have less access to electric vehicles. And similarly, one in three Americans report having difficulty meeting their energy bills. People who struggle with energy costs are more likely to have low income, identify as Black or Latino, and live in homes built before 1990. Focusing greenhouse gas reduction funds on low and moderate households of color will not only help rising energy costs, but address rising energy costs and financial but also bring older homes, which tend to be less energy efficient, up to as you grapple with definitions for low income and disadvantaged communities, we urge the EPA to draw upon definitions already used by government agencies like Treasury CDFI funds in the identification of investment areas, for lenders that are already tracking and reporting data and government definitions of low income communities, it'll be critical that the fund be aligned with the data that they already have to track. When implementing the fund and considering the question of leverage, we urge the EPA to remember that the largest source of social impact investments come from low-income people themselves in the form of deposits and credit unions and banks. The greatest opportunity for leverage will be to ensure that as many funds as possible pass unencumbered directly to on-the-ground lenders who can then leverage those every dollar of equity to more than $10 of capital. And our own research has shown that that can evolve as much as 60 times over in 5 years. Finally, we will serve to invest in market growth opportunities as well as finance. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. I want to turn things over to Mark Hartman next. So, Mark, if you want to get ready to unmute yourself. But I just want to remind folks, especially if you're reading something that you prepared, that just really try to slow down for our interpreters if at all possible. So with that, Mark, I'm going to turn to you.
Sure. Thank you. Mark Hartman. I'm the Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of Phoenix, the U.S.'s largest city. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today. What I want to talk about is that carve-out to really have solar low-income, that rooftop solar that's fully funded on low-income, similar to like a weatherization program that is that. Currently in the U.S., $1 billion is spent on the weatherization program every year that goes to cities from cities. And it does very little to lower energy use in homes. It's still not addressing just help pay for the current bills, but it doesn't solve their problem. Still facing large bills for the future. And even the no shut up policies and compassion policies there, you don't disconnect someone with Phoenix during the summer just because of the heat. Yet it just allows them to accumulate big bills. But if solar was fully funded on low income, we know that solar would last 30 years on those homes, had, you know, really good programs around warranty, that they could lower their bills by 75% and really address energy poverty. The bills will be close to zero in the summer and negative spring and fall to really help those low-income customers. Even the renters, low-income renters, still paying the energy bills. So this would be pretty significant. And talk about how impactful it could be that $1 billion investment in solar on low income could actually put solar on 60,000 homes. And over those 30 years that solar existed, it would be 15 gigawatt hours of energy production and save $2.1 billion in energy costs over that. If solar is kind of a gift that keeps on giving. You know, you look at what is the impact, we really recognize, you know, the heat-related deaths, that 40% of them are indoors. People can't afford the energy. They're leaving their homes much hotter. Folks not going to be cold, no water, try to keep it warmer. But certainly the idea of by making energy affordable to those in most need in qualified census tracts, using the existing structure of the weatherization program, be really impactful. So I really encourage you to really carve out and look at investing in putting adding solar to the weatherization program. You'll get solar on 50,000 homes. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. We're going to move to Monica Palermo next. You want to unmute yourself?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
You can.
All right. Thank you for hosting this session. I have my toddler on my lap. Hopefully he will be behaved during this session. But I just want to start off by thanking EPA for having this session and include these sessions in the RFI. It's important to understand different opportunities and trade-offs in this work environment. Want to at least request EPA consider a one-week extension on request for information. Less than 6 weeks to consider these important questions. It's very fast, with some thoughtful engagement with members. We understand your timeline is very short, but just ask you to consider that extension. But moving forward, you know, we're looking forward to hearing some of the other comments. But I wanted to highlight today a little bit about the kinds of products that will be funded from this fund. We would love to see these products be transformative in nature, potentially be able to fund multiple projects at once, and really be able to drive real change in communities. We also want to make sure that these products are not just business as usual loan products, like ones that are already on the market that have yet to achieve any kind of scale or take up from communities. You know, we really would love to see some innovative models like potentially inclusive utility investment and other low cost models be encouraged with this incredible opportunity that we have with these funds. Further, we want to make sure that these products include strong consumer protection provisions to ensure we don't see unanticipated consequences, such as the ones we've seen from the PACE program, for example. So those are my brief comments. We really look forward to submitting specific ideas about products that could be funded, and thank you for the time.
Thanks, Monica. We appreciate those comments. We're going to turn to Anna Malky here. Anna, do you want to unmute?
Hello. I thought I didn't have the unmute button, but I realized that you unmuted me. So, hi, everyone. I'm Anna Sukowski. I am a senior director at Enterprise Community Loan Fund, a community development financial institution that invests in multifamily, community, and commercial facilities. We wanted to thank you for letting us have the opportunity to speak tonight, and we have a couple of recommendations. The first is to leverage the existing institutions to deploy this funding and to ensure the funding is targeted to low-income and disadvantaged communities. We acknowledge the importance of a national green bank and also see CDFIs as a critical partner in this effort. Allocating funding to multiple entities will increase the government's ability to achieve their policy priorities while allowing us as lenders to develop the solutions that meet the needs of low-income and disadvantaged communities. Additionally, CDFIs DFIs have a track record of carrying technical assistance to capital to ensure equitable access to new capital flows. Technical assistance programs like Enterprise Community Partners, the parent company of Enterprise Community Loan Fund, Keep Safe Florida initiative helps multifamily owners understand building climate risk, build out improvements, and plan for financing. We also think funding should be flexible and should provide both grants to lenders and in projects. In order to catalyze additional investment in emission-reducing activities in low-income and disadvantaged communities, lenders need access to low or zero-cost capital at longer terms to subsidize projects that have high upfront costs and benefits may be monetized over a long time horizon. We encourage the EPA to provide flexibility in financial assistance structures similar to the CDFI Fund's financial assistance program in order to maximize deployment in low-income communities. We also encourage the EPA to ensure a broad range of projects, including housing, are eligible activities. While this funding is not explicitly geared to housing, multifamily affordable housing is key to target for emissions reduction activities, and investing in a broad set of projects and interventions is critical to curbing emissions and meeting communities for the opportunity for us to comment.
Thanks, Anna. We're going to move to Jennifer. Jennifer Zipoloff, Vassiloff, I hope I'm saying this correctly. Jennifer?
Jennifer,
oh, there you go. Great.
Jennifer Vassiloff, Opportunity Finance. There are over 1,300 financial institutions certified by the U.S. Department of Treasury specialized in providing affordable finance to low-wealth This national network of community development financial institutions, CDFI, is perfectly positioned to deliver greenhouse gas reduction fund finance to the low-income and disadvantaged communities disproportionately harmed by climate. Unlike other lenders, CDFI, as a requirement of their treasury certification, must devote at least 60% of their finance economically successful, a threshold most CDFIs easily achieve. EPA must tap into this national network of specialized lenders to deliver on the Biden-Harris administration's commitment. CDFIs are experts in the type of place-based investing needed to address localized needs of climate impact. The overlap between low-income markets and climate-impacted communities intersects with many markets served by CDFIs. Flood-prone areas like New Orleans, Nightport, manufactured housing communities impacted by extreme heat in South Florida, farm workers and rural communities displaced by wildfires in California, coastal communities of color in Florida and along the Gulf Coast, all communities served by CDFIs working to address the CDFIs have a deep knowledge of these markets and a successful practice. Even without direct federal support for clean energy finance, CDFIs have financed affordable housing, small businesses, and other projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. CDFI industry is diverse, comprising insured depositories, loan funds, venture capital funds. Of the 1,300 certified CDFIs currently operating across the country, 380 are members of our community finance. In 2020 alone, community finance network members originated more than $8 billion in finance, with the majority of members indicating they offer green finance products. CDFIs are poised to do much more. We're a nationwide network with strong private sector partners. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen noted last year that, quote, every dollar injected into CDFIs catalyzes more dollars in private sector. When the federal government wants to reach deeper into low-income markets, they turn to CDFIs. We saw this most recently in the Paycheck Protection Program. CDFIs and other mission lenders made $34 billion than any other type of money. Federal government needs CDFIs to implement greenhouse gas reduction funds successfully. Opportunity Finance Network urges EPA to leverage the strength of the nation's network.
Thank you so much, sir. Kathy, we are going to turn things over to Preet.
Hi, everyone. First, thank you to the EPA for the opportunity to offer these comments, and I will keep my comments brief, but I was encouraging, want to encourage the EPA to think expansively about the kind of projects that could be eligible for funding through the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. I'm with Main Street America. I'm a senior advisor. We have a nationwide network of over 1,200 communities across the country. Many of our Main Streets are in low and moderate income communities. Our request this evening is specifically that the EPA think about not just, of course, allowing the use of funding for solar projects and electrification, but to also think about the use of funding to support rehabilitation of existing buildings more generally, specifically buildings that have been abandoned or underutilized. The reason for this is that there are really substantial carbon emissions associated with new construction, and when we put what we already have back into active use, we can save anywhere between 50 and 75% of the emissions that would be expended during the new construction process. This is particularly important in our disadvantaged and low-income communities because we find, again, that while these projects offer many, many benefits, of which environmental impact is one of them, they are so difficult to fund. And we see that the model that has been developed through the Green Bank, which really blazes the trail to demonstrate the bankability of these projects, can be extended into the sphere of rehabbing these buildings more generally. So thank you for considering the comments and look forward to hearing the comments from others this evening as well.
Thanks, Patrice. We are now going to move to Christina Angelides. I'm just again to apologize if I'm saying that correctly. Christina?
Hello, it's Christina Angelides here, and thank you, EPA leadership and staff, for hosting this listening session and providing the opportunity to share remarks. My name is Christina Angelides, and I'm the director of the Policy Lab for Elemental Accelerator, a nonprofit climate tech investor that is working to here for participating today to share our perspective of working with entrepreneurs and equitable and innovative climate strategies, and the gap we see in bringing proven and ready emerging technology to scale, particularly for
Christina, is it all possible, could you slow down just a little bit for
us? Yeah, no problem.
Thank you so much.
As a nonprofit investor and implementation partner with climate tech companies, we work across the climate tech sector, supporting strategies in energy and transportation, food and ag, circular economy, and nature-based solutions. We've invested in over 150 portfolio companies and deployed over 115 projects in communities, many of which are frontline and underserved communities. We've seen 25 exits from our portfolio, and our investments have catalyzed $7 billion into climate tech. Elemental helps entrepreneurs both commercialize their technology solutions and social impact, and we do this by designing with community members at the table. We also work alongside investors, philanthropy, and government agencies at all levels who are ready to deploy the capital necessary to meet the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund goals of catalyzing a strong capital stack. We are a trusted steward of funding for the Department of Navy, Department of Energy, major philanthropies, and impact investors who want to help proven tech to scale more rapidly and equitably in the market. From over a decade of investing in climate tech, we have seen that there are many barriers on the road to reaching commercial scale beyond technology readiness, and especially making climate solutions available to underserved communities. We offer the following recommendations to EPA as it is defining the funding opportunity. We encourage the fund to support a range of financing vehicles, including traditional debt financing, revenue financing, on-bill financing, equity grants, and other instruments. We also believe that strong equity criteria and technical assistance should be applied across the full $27 billion to encourage the low-income and disadvantaged communities to be the floor, not the ceiling. We recommend that proven, ready-to-commercialize technology be a focus of the fund, in addition to well-commercialized technology. Scaling emerging technologies will ensure we are on track to meet mid- and long-term climate and resilience goals, and also address equity gaps, such as underinvested infrastructure, lack of financing, or other challenges that many communities face. And lastly, we strongly urge states to leverage the fund to demonstrate and replicate finance models that provide community benefits in new and innovative ways that build long-term wealth, result in job training and placement, and support intersecting community priorities. Thank you so much for taking our comments.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Christina. We're going to turn it to Elizabeth Green. Elizabeth, you can unmute.
Unmute. Thank you very much. So my whole idea is that my website, http://green247.org/yarvn.htm. So what's going on is about carbon creditors. Carbon creditors need this fund for the work that we've done and the work that we are going to more greenhouse gas than she ever intended. She has carbon credit and is a carbon creditor. A carbon credit is worth $10,000 to $700,000 per ton based on details of geophysical and economic scenarios. Archer, Kite, and Lust, July 15, 2020. Individuals need oxygen and moderate temperatures to survive. Organizations do not. Therefore, they are not environmental stakeholders. Governments and other organizations are operated by individuals. The individual carbon creditor is the stakeholder and therefore has standing to make a claim on the EPA fund. Thus, the basic unit of agency is the living individual, not the bank or the nonprofit organization. She is accountable for the consequences of her past activities that changed the state of her environment. Her environmental impact includes the health improvement or detriment caused by all of her activities. Therefore, every individual is responsible for the environmental damage she causes through the choice of activities. Thus, government officials should transfer all of the EPA funds to living, breathing, individual carbon creditors for either a safety net upon retirement or for verifying environmental impact within the scope of certification that runs on zero emissions power. I'm very concerned that some of the people who are want these funds are lifetime environmental debtors. And so they need to move aside so that for hire, the lifetime carbon creditor, environmental creditors, to administer the fund and receive the benefits for the work that we have done to preserve the environment and to postpone climate change. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. We are now going to turn it over to Paul Gerard. There you go.
Good evening, and thank you very much for the opportunity to be part of this program. I don't have a canned response like most of the folks that I've deferred, but I can tell you this. I'm representing a company that's 67 years old, the second generation, William Gerard. We have developed affordable housing in 8 states across the country, and we are just coming off a most recent award, the Edison Award, where we were able to reduce our carbon footprint on a 50-unit family LIHTC product in a small rural community outside of Minneapolis Fall. We were able to reduce our carbon footprint by 40% with the use of solar resources. We were able to do that because we were seek 9 different sources of financing on this project. And the benefits, like I heard prior, go way on into the future to the life cycle of the panels. We were able to reduce rents to make the apartment facility even more affordable to live in the facility. And most recently, we have just picked up a additional grant to build an additional housing project. And I did reach out to the local utility company and municipality to purchase additional panels if we were able to find some more resources. So these resources could make affordable housing truly affordable for the individuals that make up the facility. I'm here to just tell you that we're a real estate developer that has done this, We see the footprint. We see how we could deploy these funds, and I urge you to deploy this product so we can help reduce.
We are going to turn things over to Monica Wilson. Monica, one of the chiefs.
Hi there. Thank you so much for the opportunity to get feedback tonight. My name is Monica Wilson. I'm the Associate Director of GAIA, the Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives. We're a network of organizations across the U.S. and around the world who are working together for a just and waste-free world without burning trash. And environmental justice organizations who work in GAIA's network across the U.S. are already leading some incredible programs in communities across the country, and I really wanted to encourage EPA and those who will be part of implementing these funds to invite community composting projects and other community-led zero waste projects to be able to access this fund, especially through grants to community-led initiatives. So I wanted to share a few quick data points, and we'll be submitting that in comments too, but these data points are really show the connections between why compost is so important for greenhouse gas reduction at the city level, and also why it's such a powerful tool for building environmental justice. So the first is that composting is a climate game changer. Food waste that goes to landfill causes 20% of methane. Studies showing that cities like Detroit could reach net negative waste sector greenhouse gas emissions in the next few years by 2030. Through widespread composting and recycling programs. So there's a lot that can be done to reduce cities' greenhouse gas emissions. The second major point I want to make is that current waste systems are an incredible burden for environmental justice communities across the United States. Not only from a financial perspective, because city waste systems are often one of the top two budget items that everybody who lives in that city is paying for in their in their taxes. And then the second major reason that waste systems are an incredible burden for environmental justice communities is really through incredible direct emissions and the siting of incinerators in EJ communities across the country. Incinerators particularly are a horrible example of environmental racism. Over 79% of U.S. incinerators are in environmental justice communities. So shutting down those incinerators builds environmental justice. There's lots of organizations across the country who are organizing to close incinerators and build community-led zero waste. So the one example I pointed to is Detroit. Community-led programs are already diverting 2,000 tons of food waste every year, which has a huge benefit to the climate, and it's also helping to build local food, local resiliency to climate change, and really building local solutions. So I hope you'll face the zero waste programs and community-led programs. Thank you.
Thanks, Monica. We're going to turn things over to Jessica Garcia. Jessica?
Can you hear me?
You can. Great.
Hi, all. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Jessica Garcia, and I'm with Americans for Financial. Oh, can you hear me?
We can hear you, Jessica. Are you there?
Oh, sorry. It's muted me. My name is Jessica Garcia, and I'm with Americans for Financial Reform Education Fund. I'm a policy analyst focused on climate financial regulation. At Americans for Financial Reform Education Fund, we are working to lay the foundation for a strong, stable, and ethical financial system, one that serves the economy and the nation as a whole. Formed in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, we are a nonprofit that works in coalitions focused on civil rights, consumer, labor, business, investor, faith-based, and civic and community groups. Our organization's mission is fighting to eliminate inequity and systemic racism in the financial system in service of a just and sustainable economy. The EPA should plan the implementation of the fund to ensure it achieves both the equity and climate goals of the Inflation Reduction Act and the Justice 40 Initiative. I want to echo what at least one of our partners has requested, a one-week extension for the public comment period that would benefit all of the passionate stakeholders who are trying their best to engage thoughtfully on this fund. We recognize that the EPA is also dealing with a tight timeline because of the need to start distributing at least some of the funds in February. but a short extension would be immensely helpful to us. We ask that a minimal amount of the funds be distributed by the February 2023 deadline, with the majority of the funds distributed between then and September 2024 to allow the EPA more time for careful program design, implementation, and guidance. We urge you to award funds to multiple eligible recipients to ensure diverse stakeholders have primary access. We ask that you request that you issue a request for proposals to generate a diverse applicant pool and urge you to prioritize grant making to Black, Brown, Indigenous, people of color led nonprofit organizations that have experience with and will partner with community-based financial institutions to deliver maximum investment to the low-income, low-wealth, and disadvantaged communities whom the fund is intended to reach. As an organization that thinks a lot about consumer protection in thinking about eligible projects, we want to make sure that the loan products are structured in a way that builds wealth and financial sustainability for LMI communities and communities of color and does not result in predatory lending practices. One final note is harmonization with other agencies and outside of the EPA, and I want to flag the Community Reinvestment Act that is being finalized. The regulations are being finalized as we speak by three banking regulators, and harmonization with them and those funds and financial activities would benefit this fund. Americans for Financial Reform Education Fund intends to submit a more detailed public comment alongside coalition partners. Thank you for your time and your incorporation of our comments in your design and implementation of this fund.
Okay. Good evening, and thank you for arranging this and giving us the opportunity to comment. I haven't prepped up anything. I'm from Energize Delaware. It's a nonprofit organization. So I have several questions regarding the funds. So the first one is the eligibility. Nonprofit is eligible. However, for some nonprofit like Sustainable Energy Utility models, they usually receive funds from the REGI, partially funded by REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. So I don't know if that makes them now longer eligible to apply for the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. So that's my question one. The second question is based on my past experience. I'm the EMNB and Research Manager at Energize Delaware. So I've been going to quantify our greenhouse gas emission reduction for all our existing programs. So I hope EPA can consider in the selection criteria of greenhouse gas emission if there will be consideration for both the technology that has proven track of greenhouse gas emission reduction or like demand side management measures that already have proven greenhouse gas emission factors that you can easily calculate, then make an exception for special selection criteria for the new technology with limited information of greenhouse gas emission. For example, we recently did a biomass hydrogen project from a farm that the source is milk residue. So that kind of stuff is also another thing is need special consideration is like technical assistance programs that really have limited direct greenhouse gas emissions, but they are very important for low income community programs. And I think one last question is, I wonder how the fund or the final product of this fund will be. Would it be for existing programs with proven track, or it will consider new programs by existing program? I mean, like for Green Bank, usually we have the CPAs and revolving loan, which has proven history of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and very detailed reporting mechanism. Then for new program, I don't know how these funds will require the reporting to be, would be similar to federal funds. But as a nonprofit, we have limited experience in that. So if the selection criteria or the request for proposal will be more detailed on reporting mechanism, that will be really helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Athena. We're going to turn it over to Sarah to the last time. Sarah?
You got it as well as anybody could.
Okay, good.
My name is Mara Sable-Lotman, and I'm the CEO and President of the Environmental Grantmakers Association with over 200 members who have invested in people and planet since 1987. As an association, we are committed to a racial equity point of view in the implementation of this historic opportunity among the time-sensitive imperatives of the climate decade. On behalf of our membership, we applaud the efforts of this body to use a participatory budgeting framework for outreach and development of this investment, $27 billion of the people's money, and encourage the grantee committee and any and all trustees to commit to a racial equity practice that is in line with the practical efforts of commitments like Justice 40 in determining the disbursement type and conditions of each expenditure. Particularly, we are concerned that competitive grants inherently assume the capacity, existing infrastructure, and minimize the impact of systemic racism as a past, present, and future harm to community readiness and communities where applications to receive these funds will come from. As was recently expressed at our annual meeting in October, we implore the relevant parties to pivot from a shovel-ready approach to a climate-worthy orientation and decisions made about the scale, scope, and depth of investments made in communities in the U.S. South, rural, and urban populations. Further, we support calls for community banking empowerment, regulatory support, and process navigators, Buchanan will work with communities who lack a head start at innovation, incubation, acceleration, and development. We urge partnership with community groups, financial institutions, and specifically those with internal controls and mechanisms that reject false solutions as outlined by the communities that are most impacted by the consequences of greenhouse gas emissions. These include minority depository institutions, community development, financial, and credit unions as a core part of the strategy. EGA believes that the well-being of the planet is tied to the reversal of social inequity and to increased investments that we make now. And we ask that you make the most of your power and this opportunity to serve the generation. I will release the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Tamara. We are going to move to Andy Wyatt. Andy?
Andy Wyatt from Grid Alternative, a nonprofit working across the U.S. and internationally to build community powered solutions to advance economic and environmental people. I'll try to go less than 3 minutes. We are planning on submitting for this talk. But at Grid, we are a low-income solar storage and clean mobility program administrators, project developers, builders, scholars, job trainers, and more. We've been advocating for federal funding like this for distributed clean energy for a long time. I want to emphasize two things for the $7 billion funding stream of grants, states, and others. One is very distinct from the other roughly $7 billion, and the reference to rooftop solar is crucial. EPA should not overbroaden what zero emission technologies should be granted here. Distributed solar and storage have unique benefits for the grid, resilience, energy justice, and other goals. Second, states should be the primary target to incentivize policy development and equitable clean energy access programs and state-level energy regulations. Tribes should also get an at least proportionate share, and nonprofits and municipalities can fill in gaps and provide models in states, especially in states that are still working on those policies. On the financing fund, for eligible entities, the $20 billion side, on top of lots of things others have said, we would urge a broad enough definition of eligible entities to include a range of national and community-based nonprofits, broader range of project types is appropriate, so long as they truly, especially under the $8 billion, but we would like for that to be a floor, not a ceiling. So long as they truly benefit economic and environmental justice. I look forward to working with EPA and others. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
We are going to turn to our next speaker, Valerie Katz. Valerie? Sorry, hear me now?
Hello?
We can, Valerie.
Okay, sorry about that. So this is Valerie Katz. I'm in Northeast Ohio, and I'm the Deputy Director of Sustainability for Cuyahoga County. First of all, I want to thank Andy for her comments about rooftop solar, and also thank Mark for his earlier comments about rooftop solar, and agree with the need to support rooftop solar programming in underserved communities. Secondly, our department does plan to respond to the full RFI, but just wanted to respond to two questions verbally in particular. The first is question number one under Section 3, eligible projects. And the question is, what type of projects should EPA prioritize? And please describe how prioritizing such projects would, A, maximize greenhouse gas emission and air pollution reduction, and B, deliver benefits to low-income and disadvantaged communities. And in response, a significant portion of Northeast Ohio's existing grid infrastructure is older than 50 years, and while routine maintenance practices have been considered adequate, according to the American Society of Civil Engineers, little has been done by local utilities to integrate renewable DERs, battery storage, for the purpose of strengthening grid resiliency in Northeast Ohio. We feel that the EPA should prioritize projects that maximize greenhouse gas emissions reductions, but this should also, but that also improve the resiliency and reliability of local electrical systems. So preference should also be given to local grid systems with the ability to island to function independently of the main grid during grid outages, especially in underserved communities. So for example, projects involving microgrid technologies. These projects should be based on distributed renewable energy, which include the integration of electric vehicle infrastructure. We'd like to respond to question number 5 under section 2 of program design. And the question is, are there best practices in program design that the EPA should consider to reduce burdens on applicants? And in response, Cuyahoga County believes that there should be flexibility with regard to the source of acceptable match dollars, and specifically that private sector investment projects considered as match. So for example, where projects are relying on third-party developers and power purchase agreements or energy as service models, that these dollars associated with capital outlay can be utilized as match. This approach would reduce the barriers that large match dollar requirements often pose. Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie. We're going to turn to our next speaker here, Alan.
Hi, thank you very much. I am sitting I'm the director of Virginia Clean Cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And we deal with the vehicle technology. I appreciate this program. I am submitting a request that the program consider including a submission for metrics for modeled greenhouse gas reduction, perhaps on maybe even considering a dollars per ton valuation back throughout the program, to show the bang for the buck that is pursued by the federal government for these initiatives. Also, perhaps directly supporting this and these calculations through online return calculations or Excel tools suggested by the EPA, suggesting that this carbon calculation, greenhouse gas calculation, also be tied to presenting back the social cost of carbon as feedback for projects and feedback for the program. Detail is calculated at the federal level and could be engaged in a couple different ways. Vehicle loans, zero emission fuel often costs far lower than the cost of the equivalent fossil fuels, maybe 75% lower in markets like the Commonwealth of Virginia. And this lower fuel cost does result in consumer or company or government savings of thousands of dollars over the lease period or maybe $1,000 a year. Lenders should take those into consideration as lower fuel costs could present more favorable loan terms. And EPA could suggest tools like EPA's own fueleconomy.gov now enable the use of used vehicles, but sometimes tax credits are confusing to gain access to, may be difficult for rural market-constrained individuals to engage that. So zero emission technology financing that assists EPA should also track each round of loan funding from the initial loan to the recaptured funds and future loan life cycle. The loan funds don't just get created and discarded after one round of funding, but so that there is a life cycle return of those investments to do more and more good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan. So we are just over the 8 o'clock hour. We're here until 9 o'clock. But I want to remind folks, if you have joined in the last 30 minutes or so, we can continue our intro. There's a couple ways that you can raise your hand to talk out for comments for tonight. If you've joined through Zoom, you can use the reactions button and go ahead and click that raise hand. If you are calling in, it's a picture or not. You just ask to keep your hand raised the entire time so we call on you. Also, if you would prefer to hear this in Spanish.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, and you are listening to Solar Now and It's the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Buffet. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you know the slogan for the show is this: power in numbers. Then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned design, EV charge, EV manufacturing, installation, workforce development, and other African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar and other renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the African-American community through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. It's also brought to you every week, ladies and gentlemen, by the Black Sports Legends, BS, HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to PositiveChangePC.com. Log on to PositiveChangePC.com. Please go over to our GoFundMe link, and you'll get more information about that initiative there. Also, it's brought to you by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and you can get more information on that organization by logging on to blacksandsolar.org. That's blacksandsolar.org. Ladies and gentlemen, as you may know, you are listening to the Public Engagement Opportunities National Public Listening Session, which was held on November the 1st, 2022. It was put on by EPA. If you've been listening, they have, these guests have provided some very, very, I think, great insights of how this $27 billion in this new green gas reduction fund should be applied. Now, the question is, will it? Now, we're going to go right back to this information that you're listening to over the World Wide Web, over Blog Talk Radio. We are streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and Link, and we can also be heard on iTunes. So we had to take a slight pause for the cause and to let people know who is bringing you this information that you are listening to over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC. And as we said, power for, one of our other slogans are, power for the people. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, let's get back to the EPA listening session, which was held on November the 1st, 2022.
We have Spanish interpretation happening on the Spanish channel, so just hit that interpretation button, and you can move into that Spanish channel. I just want to remind all of our speakers that because we have that Spanish interpretation, we want to ask that you speak slowly, if at all possible, to make sure we have a meaningful quality. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our next speaker here. We have Mario Green. Mario?
Hello. I hope you all can hear me. My name is Mario Green. I am the policy and government relations Indy Loan Fund. I just want to echo many of the points that have already been made, especially by Jessica Garcia, Tamara Toles O'Loughlin, Patrice Frey, and Jennifer Vassiloff. Just in terms of the importance of CFIs and the work that they do, and the importance of making sure that the applicant pool is diverse, and that we do what we can to support smaller, more emerging, or green entities that are looking to ramp up their capacity and involvement in climate resilience. Beyond that, it's really important to prioritize minority-based CFIs and nonprofit organizations through the awarding process, because they are more likely to be able to reach the minority communities that we're all trying to target. Prioritizing organizations with a proven track record of serving minorities is exceedingly important. And it's also important for us to look at not just low income, but majority-minority neighborhood success and historic advantage. Focus, again, should be on, and we should always make sure that we are inclusive of as many organizations, particularly rural, as we can be. So like most of the major points, I want to get our kids, but thank you so much.
Thanks, Mario. We appreciate those comments. We are going to turn it over to Margarita Parra. Margarita?
Hi. I hope you can hear me. So thank you very much for your work. You're a nonprofit for people to pick up on our economy. And we really thank you for the right to this. And to, yeah, and take this type of money. We want to encourage the EPA to find systemic solutions. Not just one time, especially as we are getting access to loans from people of color to clean energy. This means addressing areas, for example, qualification to loans, credit worthiness, or credit granted, and proof of income. We particularly focus on non-debt, and this increased utility investments have been for energy efficiency upgrades and can be used for other applications such as professional education, solar, and other DEI. And we encourage the EPA to fix this type of solutions in this new fund. We also want to ensure that the EPA leverages focus on the funding program. I'm actually working with the EPA also in the Student School Bus program. And we're really happy that we have both IRA and ICA resources. So we need to make sure that we leverage each other and this fund really fills out. For example, that's like building, training, new support development, genuine community innovation. All of this funding is possible. We also want to encourage EPA to ensure of lobbying views by the EPA for all the funding decisions. And do that in, and for example, we have been to the White House to do that in this rate. And as many of us will have as mentioned, we want to ensure that not just low income, but also people of color that have been disproportionately affected by solutions that have received funds. Also people that have more health problems and also people. We also encourage the participation of health groups in the funding system, so we really like and others to be engaged often for real community solutions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Margarita. I just want to again remind folks if we can slower our fundraising are asking us all to just a little bit slower if we can. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chris Meister. Chris Meister.
Can you hear me?
We can,
thanks. Okay. Chris Meister. I'm Executive Director of the Illinois Finance Authority. In September of 21, we were named the Climate Bank by Governor Pritzker under Illinois state law. So we are primarily a issuer of federally with debt, but we are pivoting towards pursuant to our climate bank designation, and we intend to file responses to the RFI. I would just ask that EPA take a look at issuers of conduit debt, of which there are many across the country, and other state and local base entities that issue tax exempt bonds, because we already have existing balance sheet governance and expertise in this area, and we are closely aligned with the executive and the legislature in whatever jurisdiction. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. All right, we are going to turn things over to our next.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can.
Hey. Hey, everyone. My name is Ishmael Buckner, and I'm a policy advocate on the climate team over at Public Citizen, a consumer advocacy org with over 500,000 members nationwide. I want to take this time to echo a couple of points that were made tonight, including the need to prioritize community development, financial institutions, CDFIs, credit unions, minority depository institutions, and other community institutions. I want to say, full disclosure, my birthday is February 12th. So what a wonderful day to do right by families and communities still living the financial and environmental consequences of redlining by making sure that it's only a minimal amount of the funds are dispersed by that time. We want to make sure that the majority of funds go out much closer to the September 30th, 2020. We want to make sure that the way that this program is done is one that's really considering multiple issues. It's one that's considering how to best empower and work with folks who are already empowered in the community. It's crafted in a way that makes sure that as much as possible, the wealth gap is being closed. And it's done in a way that really honors the spirit of all the work that's gone into this administration and to the 40% of benefits that are supposed to go towards disenfranchised communities. The renewable energy sector has a horrible track record, atrocious.
Thank you.
At the same time, we have companies that have multi-billion-dollar market capitalization that started out as small companies that got a lot of funding from local, state, and federal government. Those same companies fall short to the labor participation of
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. I'm your host, Ronald Buffet. I apologize for the slight interruption, but we're getting ready to switch gears on our show today. We're getting ready to talk about the clean energy solution. You've been listening to the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund listening session held by EPA. And we encourage you to log on to our website at Positive Change, and you can listen to the November the 9th and November the 1st listening session in its entirety. Ladies and gentlemen, as we indicated, we are always looking for new information to bring you news that you definitely can use here on Positive Change, and we are going to be listening to a short video Clean Energy Solutions Center. The Clean Energy Minstrels Stereo CEM is a high-level global forum to promote policy and programs that advance clean energy technology, to share lessons learned and best practices, and to encourage the transition to global energy economy. Initiatives are based on areas of common interest among practice in governments and other stakeholders' frameworks, and clean energy ministerial reaffirms the 12 clean energy ministerial 2021 defines the CEM governance structure and outlines a mission statement, objectives, membership, and guiding principles. So this organization's platform is where membership helps share the global clean energy agenda and advance the development of clean energy technologies. Ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to hear that this short
piece of work on regional and global interconnection.
I co-lead defense work on sustainable
life. I co-lead work on nuclear innovation.
And I work in poverty and flexibility.
And I'm coordinating work on decarbonizing industry.
I coordinate. I co-chair the hydrogen initiative.
And we coordinate work on long-term energy barriers.
And I coordinate work on zero emission commercial base.
Clean energy, education, and empowerment.
We co-chair a clean energy ministerial committee and one of the proud boss of the
CNC. I also co-chair the SEND team committee and lead the CNC team, both in consultancy.
Our global clean energy community is working hard to bring insight, inspiration, and impact. But despite the progress being made, we know that much more needs to be done. Global clean energy deployment this decade must be many times faster than the last. This is not incremental change, but monumental change. Not a small step, but a giant leap. And so, as we look forward, we know that it is not the course of the SAM, one that looks to supercharge the scale of clean energy deployment, one that looks to supercharge action across every sector of the economy, and one that looks to supercharge inclusive action across all parts of society. This is a critical year for raising clean energy ambition, and the STEM is a critical platform for taking clean energy action.
Ladies and gentlemen, you were listening to Clean Energy Solutions, a short video. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our show for the day. You've been listening to Solar Now and its future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you have joined us, you know the slogan for this show. If this power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar design, EV charge, EV manufacturing, installation, workforce development, and other African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You know it's brought to you also by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. You can get more information on that initiative by logging onto our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. And it's brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, the National Association of Blacks in Solar. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the close of another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We hope that we definitely brought news that you could definitely use here on the platform today as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Singing, Life is a song worth singing.